Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Nobody puts Albert in a corner. Joe Madden talking about Hap and Almora, and it is time to start something that we are going to enjoy throughout this baseball season. The television voice, and I think at some time spring training radio voice of the Chicago Cubs, Len Casper, is joining us now on the Bernstein and McKnight show on The Score. He's on Twitter, at Len Casper. What's happening, Len? How are you?
Good morning, guys. Connor, welcome back.
Thank you, Len. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you today.
Everything's good. Just ready to catch the Cubs and the Rangers today with a pretty good lineup. Russell's not in there, but Baez playing short. And I think it's a lineup we will see quite a bit this year.
All right, what's left to figure out? What starts to matter now as we get down to decisions more of luxury than anything else?
Yeah, I think the final spot on the roster, and I would lean toward the extra pitcher than the extra position player, although you never know. Peter Borges has had a really good spring and, you know, has the speed component, can play all three outfield spots, would be a good seventh, eighth inning, ninth inning guy for Schwarber, maybe with a 3-2 lead early in the season as a defensive replacement. But most teams are going with 13 pitchers. So, you know, it's that push and pull of you know, how you've set up your bullpen. And there are a few candidates out here to grab that final spot, but I think that's the big decision. In terms of the lineup, it's pretty much set. The biggest question is one we talked about in the past, and that is just how to get everybody as many at-bats as possible. But that those are good problems to have. I would expect Chris Jimenez will be the backup catcher, and Victor Caratini will likely be the everyday catcher at AAA.
Len, I don't know how you necessarily like to scout spring training. We've seen time and time again that a good spring does not correlate to a good season or even really a good start once you get to big league play. But Tyler Chatwood has had one heck of a run here in his first spring with the Cubs. And I wonder if you can characterize what you've seen out of the young man and how his stuff has played and what kind of fit he is.
Yeah, spring training numbers generally don't matter at all. With a lot of examples over the years of veteran pitchers who've just been terrible in spring training and have put together Cy Young type seasons, and you know, guys who've come out of nowhere to put up great spring numbers, and then, you know, 10 days into the regular season they're back in the minor leagues. But in terms of the guys you know are going to be here, it's been fun to watch Chatwood. I think, you know, the curveball is something that has been a really good pitch for him, but at altitude in Denver, just not quite as effective. They really like how he spins the ball, and he's a good athlete. He's a great number five to have. I mean, Jose Quintana's your four. You know, you've got a really good rotation, but most teams really struggle in finding that fifth starter, and to have Tyler Chatwood be that guy, I think they feel really, really good about him, and I'm excited to see him pitch every 5 days.
Justin Wilson looks like he's a little better, but had a bad outing the last time, giving up, was it a walk and a three-run homer? Are you still optimistic that he can be salvaged into being a higher leverage reliever?
Yeah, I am. And, you know, this goes back to the previous answer about spring training. And we've seen some really good, and we've seen some not so good from Justin Wilson. And I think regardless of how he would look in spring training, the proof is going to be in the regular season. And, you know, he's always been a guy who's been able to throw strikes, and he didn't when he got to the Cubs last year. And you would like to chalk it up to just maybe some nerves and maybe not really settling in on a really good club late in the year. But they love the stuff, and, you know, he's closed in the past. And I think ideally, Dan, they look at him as a guy who can get outs in the eighth inning and even in the ninth if Brandon Morrow might not be available that night.
What is the big thing with Brandon Morrow to you? He's not that far removed from having been a starter in Toronto. He, what was it, made five starts in 2015 for the Padres. And yet, you know, the OAA was talking about moving to the pen and how guys' stuff plays up. I don't know that he was necessarily the automatic signing that he had been billed as, and yet Everybody with the Cubs, Joe Maddon, front office guys, everybody seems to be completely sold on Brandon Morrow. I wonder if there's more selling to be done.
Well, you know, the thing about Morrow has been health. He's had some arm troubles, obviously, and last year proved that he seemed to be back. And as you say, you know, he's done both in his career. You know, relief pitchers, it can be very mercurial, as we all know. And the fact that he hasn't done it in the ninth inning yet, you know, we have to see how he responds to maybe back-to-back-to-back save opportunities if that happens. I do think the Cubs will be pretty careful with him in that regard and maybe won't go three in a row with him early in the season. But I think the biggest question is going to be when he blows back-to-back saves. How does he respond to that? Because invariably it will happen. It happens to the best of them. But everybody here loves the stuff, loves his attitude. What I've seen so far in the spring, he's looked very good. And I just think they feel good about the group in general. You know, to me, Morrow doesn't – in some bullpens, you've got your closer who's just, you know, lights out, and then you've got a bunch of other guys. I view this bullpen as, you know, three or four ninth-inning type pitchers, and right now Morrow's your closer, and he's making the money. But Edwards, is going to get an opportunity to close some games. I mentioned Wilson. Steve Cishek has done it in the past. I think they feel very good about the group they have in general. And in terms of Morrow, Connor, I think, again, let's see what it looks like in the regular season. But based on what he did last year, particularly in the playoffs, I'm pretty excited to watch him pitch.
Where are we on John Lester bouncing throws to first? Have you seen any of that? Has anybody been up watching him and Butters on the backfield trying to do this? Because we made a lot of it when we first learned of it, and then it just we haven't heard anything.
I haven't seen it since the one earlier this spring. He started the other night, and the only ground ball back to him took him to the first base side, so he flipped it to first base. But I just don't anticipate it being a big issue, and if it happens, it'll happen very rarely, because the ball that he's going to have to throw like that would be either a bunt or a dribbler that's to the third base side of the mound, but somebody over there can't field it. And, you know, I think he would like to be able to field those balls and not make Bryant or Contreras or Russell make a five-star play. But I think when push comes to shove, that's probably what will happen. And Contreras threw out a couple of guys trying to steal. As we know, John's pretty good at holding runners on first base with his quick move to the plate. So, you know, it'll come up just because it does and very every year. But I really don't think it's going to be a huge problem for him.
I'm talking with Len Casper here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, the new midday show here on 670 The Score. I keep on, Len, having to remind myself that Albert Almora turns just 24. What is it, April 16th of the coming season. He's played two seasons in the bigs and only one of them really a full season. With the Cubs having traded away a lot of top prospects in order to get the pieces they needed to win a World Series, to you know be these consistent contenders, I start to look toward the younger and younger guys and trying to figure out, I don't know, development paths, I suppose. And with Almora being played the way he's been played by Joe Maddon, when do you start to wonder about what that path could be, what the top potential might be for Albert Almora? He was the first draft pick of the Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer era, and he's had to fight for time.
I think his path is more common than the other guys. And I think that in comparison, it has looked as though maybe he has been a failure by any stretch, but that there's something going on that's not right. And I would remind people that this is generally how it goes. And as you said, he's still a very young ball player, and I've been really high on Albert since the day I first saw him in spring training about 3 or 4 years ago. We saw him make plays, I did at least in spring training as a 19 or 20 year old, that a lot of guys who are 30 or 31 didn't have the presence of mind to make. So his instincts are off the charts. I think the biggest question all along for him has been about his offense. He doesn't walk as much as some of the other young hitters on this team, but I've seen some improvements in that area. I think he's had a better approach at the plate. How much power is in that bat remains to be seen, but I look at him as more of a line drive gap type hitter who should hit for a pretty high average, and because he doesn't walk quite as much, needs to hit for a high average. But if you look at his numbers last year, they're really good. And, you know, a lot of those at-bats came against lefties. So the question is, will he get a lot of opportunities against some of the top right-handed starters in the league? And that's going to depend on Ian Happ's playing time for sure, and how good or bad a start Albert gets off to. So I don't know yet what the potential is for Albert, but if you're asking me, Connor, is he a guy I would look at as an everyday starting center fielder on a championship caliber club? I absolutely think that he can be, and I think he can be this year.
I mentioned his name before in my question about John Lester, talking about Brian Butterfield, but there's a bunch of new coaches doing all kinds of new things. Have you observed anything notable, anything different, anything that you think is going to take some getting used to for everyone involved?
Well, you've got a new pitching coach in Jim Hickey, who comes with a wonderful resume. The work Chris Bosio did here was absolutely terrific. The Cubs have been really fortunate, man, over the last couple of decades, to have Larry Rothschild and Chris Bosio, who I would consider in the top five in the game today, and I would put Jim Hickey in that category as well. So I think Hick getting used to his pitchers, them getting used to him. But you've got Mike Borzello and Tommy Hotovy, and the infrastructure here in terms of game planning that has been pretty set for several years. So I think that's really important. Chili Davis getting to know his hitters. I think he's bonded really well with Kyle Schwarber early on. I think we're all curious to see what adjustments Jason Hayward makes now with a new hitting coach. Brian Butterfield has a ton of energy, and everyone you talk to who's known him even a little bit says he's one of the best guys you'll ever meet. So, you know, that part of it's been really fun, I think, just to get to know some guys who I've heard a lot about over the course of time. And Will Venable, you know, the new first base coach, Princeton guy, two-sport guy, I think could be on a managerial track down the road. So I think the Cubs feel real good about all the coaches they've added.
So Chris Bryant wins an MVP in 2016. He finished seventh last season, and it's probably, I don't know, that's
not enough RBIs.
Not enough RBIs. 29 home runs as opposed to 39. He was derided in some places for not having as good a season as he had in 2016, and yet the difference is kind of like splitting hairs. But we did, I think, at times see Chris being pitched like a real big boy in the big leagues. And I wonder if you've talked with him, I wonder if he's talked with others, or even Chili Davis to a point, about what it's like to be treated the way, and maybe in your opinion, Chris has always been treated like one of the most dangerous guys in the game, because he, you know, is. But I wonder if he's thought much or talked much about being that, as big a threat as he is, and how pitchers treat those guys differently.
I think Chris has had many of those conversations. He's very self-aware. He really speaks like a hitting coach would, because he's the son of a hitting coach. And he and his dad, you know, since Chris was a very young boy, they've talked about the art of hitting and all of these things that you just discussed. You know, his OPS last year was higher than it was the year before.
Yep.
If you hear some people talk, it's like he had this horrible year. It's like, no, he pretty much had the same season he had the year before, with lower homers and RBIs. I think in his case, the tweaks that he will make and the adjustments, he's always going to tweak, I think, his approach in terms of trying to hit the ball to the opposite field for power. But I think it's just that slider off the plate, right? Maybe not swinging at certain pitches. And I think that is really nitpicking, but I think Chris will do that to himself. And, you know, even if his OPS this year is 1,050 and he has another MVP-type campaign, I think he'll still find things that he can improve, and that's what I love about him. The fact that people are going to treat him like he's one of the best hitters in the league is because he is. You know, the idea of protection is interesting to me, though, right? JD and I talk a lot about it, and there's this theory that if you put an Anthony Rizzo behind Chris Bryant, he's going to get more fastballs. And JD's point, and he comes at it from a pitcher's perspective, he said, it doesn't matter who hits behind the guy. If I don't want to pitch to Chris Bryant, I'm not going to pitch to Chris Bryant, right? So how do you really protect him? And I'm not sure you do. I think people are always going to be careful with him. They're going to be careful with Rizzo. They're going to be careful with Contreras when he's in a really hot stretch. And what that means is I think this team's going to lead the league in walks again, and they're going to pass along those RBI opportunities to the guy behind him in the lineup. And that's where Schwarber, Hayward, Russell, Zobrist, Baez, those guys become incredibly important because I think they're all going to bat with a lot of men on base.
Last thing I have for you, Lenny, an early talking point in camp was the starters admitting that they need to go deeper into games, particularly early on in the season, that the overall wear and tear on the material members of the bullpen started out too early. There were too many comebacks, and too much was asked of the offense, but really some of that attrition was felt in some tough innings early because the starters just weren't lasting long enough. How much of that, and we'll ask Joe this, but how much of that is Joe recalibrating what he's asking of a starter when he makes that walk out to the mound? Do you think there are going to be some more, hey, you know, I need you to get this guy. You know, I know you maybe you're at about 90% right now, but I need this from you because we got to start thinking about saving some innings here and there because it's not just a one-way street. It's not, there is some control available to the manager in how he allots his resources.
It's a fascinating topic, isn't it? That we talk about saving starter innings for later in the year. But now it's about bullpen innings.
Right.
So we are kind of recalibrating things, and I think that's why most teams are going to have 8 relief pitchers early in the season. And I think it's also why, you know, the 2 or 3 guys you would consider kind of the not the back end of your bullpen, but the guys who don't pitch in the biggest leverage spot, the highest leverage situations, end up getting swapped out with guys at AAA, and you end up by the end of the year using 25 to 30 pitchers. My hunch is that Joe is still going to protect his starters a lot early in the season to make sure that not necessarily October, but August and September, he can give that conversation that we just had about, you know, I know you're just about at your limit here, but I need you to get this guy out. I think he wants to make sure that the second half of the season, his starting pitchers are able to go that extra inning. We saw Jose Quintana with the big complete game in Milwaukee in September. That was a big win for the Cubs last year. So I think he's going to tend to push a little harder later in the year with his starters and probably use more bullpen early in the season. That's just a guess.
All right, Lynn, are you going to be doing some play-by-play for some of these remaining spring training games here in these airwaves?
Yeah, I've got tomorrow night with Ron Coomer, and then Friday afternoon, Jim Deshaies and I, the TV duo, will be doing some radio.
Very cool.
The Cubs and the Brewers, so looking forward to that. And, I'll be doing what I've always done when we're on national TV, jumping in with the radio crew, and always look forward to that.
Very cool. Len, look forward to you being a part of this show throughout the season.
Thanks, guys. Congratulations. I'll be listening.
Thank you, Len. That is Len Casper, television voice, usually, of the Cubs, brought to you by Orkin. Termites aren't funny. $5 billion of damage a year won't have you busting a gut. Visit Orkin.com today to save 15% on termite control. Orkin, pest control down to a science. You see this article that just posted on The Athletic by James Fegan?
Is it about video games?
One specific video game.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And its role on the White Sox. It's just, you know, there's the NBA article we talked about before,
right.
During the midway, and now there's this to get to, specific to your Chicago White Sox. And you know all these people involved.
I do. My primer on Fortnite comes from the White Sox.
I'm sure it does. He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. We'll get to this in just a moment on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Things always seem to happen this way. You talk about something, and then magically the synchronicity of the news.
We've willed it into existence. That's how I choose to believe it.
It's back to you. Yeah, we created something like this. Little did James Fegan know when he was writing it for The Athletic that he was completely beyond his control. And he just posted this. His White Sox prospects Dane Dunning and Jake Berger spent Tuesday afternoon streaming themselves playing the video game Fortnite on Twitch.
That's a dangerous combination, those two.
Why?
Oh, they'll get after it.
Which
they're a good time.
As could have been deduced, is a platform explicitly for allowing other people online to watch you play video games.
That's right, Twitch, where you can watch other people live their lives on video games.
They also played with Reds super prospect Nick Senzel at one point. Perhaps they realize it's never too soon to start recruiting future free agents. Now we're just waiting, of course,
tampering.
For MLB to weigh in with a tampering note here. It says, thank goodness someone had the wherewithal to ask Dunning about Fortnite before he got reassigned to minor league camp. Unfortunately, it was not someone who knew much about video games. What is Fortnite? A video game that is sweeping the nation and is very popular among young athletes. Dunning said, like a third-person Call of Duty, but kind of cartoonish. I guess like Halo, but it's more of a battle royale. There's an old game called H1Z1, like an old battle royale game they kind of base it off of. And from there, you're able to build and stuff. And protect yourself with shelter. That's pretty good. Dane from Niles. They did a really good job with that game. A parenthetical here that's bracketed. He said, writer's note. I looked this up. Apparently, something that came out in 2015 is an old game.
3 years, and it's gone to the dustbin.
Who's the best Fortnite player in camp? Dunning laughs. I don't know. Berger's pretty good. Me and him play in camp a lot, actually. In this locker room, Patrick Leonard's pretty good. I'd like to think I'm good, but on the minor league side, we have a lot of guys who are pretty good, and we'll play with them, but mainly it's just me and Berger. On the minor league side, there's this kid named Ben Wright. He's got like 500 wins on his Xbox. He's got like 300 on his PS4. It's ridiculous.
Never saw Ben Wright. Was down there for a week, never found him.
He was probably playing video
probably
games.
Playing Fortnite.
Is it sort of a way to bond with teammates? I think that's more golf. But it's nice being able to go back and be able to talk to Berger because he's back home. It's fun to play with your teammates because you can talk smack the next day. Do you worry that Berger is using his extra time off to get a lot better than you? He gets to play a little bit more, Dunning said. But hopefully, obviously, once he starts doing his rehab and stuff like that, I feel I'll probably get a little bit more time than him. As of right now, he's probably got a little bit more of an advantage, an unfortunate advantage.
So last season, video games took the White Sox bullpen and rotation by storm. And it wasn't Fortnite, it wasn't, you know, the Nintendo Switch, right? The one that you got the controllers on the unit, or you can port it onto the big screen.
Okay.
And use the controllers there. Okay. So the new Zelda game had come out for Switch, and all of a sudden you walk through the White Sox clubhouse and everybody, every pitcher is playing this game. And it wasn't one of the young kids that was, you know, on top of this thing. It wasn't a leaderboard populated by 22-year-olds.
Nate Jones?
Mike Damn Pelfrey.
Really?
They were going up to him asking for advice on pitching and mostly on Zelda and how you do this, that, and the other thing. He had conquered the game faster than anybody could even fathom. I had no idea what the hell it was. I played Zelda last on a Nintendo 64, so that wasn't really my forte. But apparently, even the old heads can get in on a video game.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Who is the most important Chicago athlete at the moment?
I think I know where you're leading me here.
Well, you do know.
And I suppose, yeah, we talked about it during the break. It's got to be Mitchell Trubisky.
Of course, it is.
And it has to be Mitchell Trubisky.
It's the quarterback of the Bears, upon whom and around whom everything is being built or rebuilt. And over the weekend, our buddy Rich Campbell from the Tribune got to spend some sit-down time with Mitchell Trubisky over in Rosemont at the Sports Collectibles Convention there. And there's some sound here you're going to want to hear. This originally aired on the Bear Download podcast, and it's Mitchell Trubisky, among other things, understanding that right now everything, all of this is contingent on him being the guy, and he's cool with that.
I think it's just all part of the process. Obviously, it's very exciting, and I can't be more thankful for the situation I ended up with, especially with Ryan Pace, like, kind of running the show, and like him just really believing in me and this organization and the other guys we have, and we did really well in free agency. We got to get a couple other guys back healthy, but it's like very exciting, and I just feel like we're in a perfect situation to really emerge and have a great year this year. So I'm very excited about Nagy and the rest of the staff. Defense is going to be solid once again. Just got to get healthy. And I can't wait to get to work with those new guys that we got. So like, very exciting times for us.
What is the challenge inherent in this plan? Knowing that you're the center of it, what's the challenge for you?
Hey, Brian. Well, Brian. I think more short term, just like memorizing the new playbook, building chemistry with the new guys, and just mastering this offense. And I think everything else long term will take care of itself. So it's really day by day, do everything I can, continue to be myself, master this new offense, and make sure the guys are learning it too. So we just have great OTAs in the summers, great training camp, and then once we get everyone back healthy, just rolling right into the season. And that's the way I look at it. And I have big expectations and big plans for this team, but I know you got to take it one day at a time, and I'm going to have a bunch of help with these new guys coming in, with Nagy and his staff, and we just got a lot of offensive wisdom that that came into the building, so very fortunate.
So the interview with the Bulls game last night, and you said, it's my team. And obviously that's a different dynamic than it was a year ago. So what does that mean to you, your team?
It just means that I have more responsibility. Everyone's looking towards me. I need to be the leader day in and day out, and I will be. And I'm excited for that challenge, and I'm excited to continue to earn the trust of my teammates. So, and my teammates have told me that too. So they know we're all in this together, and I got their backs. So it's not me being possessive. It's I'm a leader. This is our team, and it's all about the Chicago Bears and this great organization. And I couldn't be more excited. And I feel like I learned a lot from last year. It's going to help carry over into this year. But obviously, one person can't do it alone. That's why football is the best team sport. You need all other 11 guys to be on the same page. So.
In the radio interview you called in for, you talked about Nagy's offense exploiting your skill set. But what specifically do you feel like he's going to do with what you've got? What are we going to see?
I just think we're going to see a lot more quick passes, RPOs, screen game, get the ball out, deep ball shots, just everything that I'm going to get good at that you've seen at North Carolina, and some stuff we even ran last year. We're just going to do even more of it and get the ball to our playmakers out in open space. And just be more, just like hide the ball, play action, more flashy stuff in the backfield to hide the ball, and just it's not just going to be running right at you. It's going to be some more tricky stuff, and like I said, RPOs, quick game, deep ball, and we're going to be all over the place. I've watched a lot of Kansas City film already, and I feel like me and Alex are similar players. We both throw a deep ball, accuracy, get the ball out quick, both very mobile, and just play smart, play accurate, get the ball to your playmakers and let them do the work, and just get the ball out quick so you help the O-line on. So I feel like it's going to be a great offense for the players we have.
But when you see the Chiefs, what do you think? I mean, they were like top five last year, and Tariq Hill, jet sweep action, Kareem Hunt to the post, that kind
so
of thing.
We're just trying to build similar pieces to what they had to fit that skill set and the offense we have. But ultimately, it comes down to execution. But I believe in the guys we have in the organization, and just got to learn the offense and go out there and have fun with it. And it's going to be awesome. I can't wait. It's going to be very explosive.
Chase was talking to us on Thursday about, I asked him, like, what does a quarterback need to be successful in Matt's offense? He said a brain. Do you have a sense of mentally what's going to be required in terms of checks and that kind of thing? How would you explain it?
I'm very excited about it. I feel like it's more responsibility on my plate. Okay. It's not just going to be one play. There's going to be a lot more checks and audibles at the line of scrimmage, hand signals to change routes, protections. The new protections kind of already been going through them on film my own, and they, just in my head, they make a lot more sense. So I can't wait to dive in with the coaching staff once we get started. And it's just going to be new, but I feel like that's a strength I had coming into the league. Yeah. I'm a student of the game. I have a football mind, so I like to just go back to my house and in my office and just study the game and make sure I know my job inside and out.
That's awesome. What did you end up doing at 3D QB? What did they work with you on?
Oh, yeah, we worked with all kinds of stuff. Basically, they didn't really change my mechanics. They tried to just how I explain it to other people is they just – so to get to this point, everyone has, like, their best throwing motion.
Okay. And like arm slot you're talking about, that kind of – all that stuff.
Like balance, feet in the ground, hip movement, hip leaves the shoulders, torque, loose offhand, and then with arm action with your head being straight, not pulling. And just taking that, just taking your best throwing motion and trying to replicate it and duplicate it every time. So they say guys that come to them before them, they probably do it maybe two to three out of ten times. And they try to get into the 8 to 9 range of just that perfect throwing motion. So you're taking less off your arm, you're more accurate, and you're throwing with more power and velocity using your lower body, not your legs. So I feel like I learned a lot throughout the process. I feel really good where my body and arm is at right now, just working with them. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
These pass catchers, what do you see in Allen, Trey, Taylor, just on paper, what you know about them? What do you see they are adding?
Yeah, Allen, big frame, proven receiver, great route runner. We'll go up and get it. Just got to give him a chance. Maybe close my eyes a couple times and throw it his way. Trey Burton, very versatile receiver, great route runner, very reliable hands. And Taylor Gabriel, quick guy, just got to get the ball in his hands. Somebody plays for you, and he's going to take the top off and hopefully make guys pay when they're playing tight on us. And just give him the ball and let him work. And from what I've heard, just these guys are ready to work. They're great personalities, great people, and the type of guys we need in the locker room to motivate everyone else and get this organization continue heading in the right direction. So I'm excited to work with them.
Mitch Trubisky is excited.
Did you catch that?
He is very, very excited.
I did catch that sense from him.
I may have to listen again to be certain that that's my takeaway, to make sure I come away with that conclusion.
Did he not sell you on it? But didn't drive that point home.
What was most impressive to me was some of the physiological, mechanical work that they're sort of letting him in on and breaking it all down to build it back up. That's what he's talking about, his balance and his platform and his angles and some of that.
I was actually pretty excited. There was what I hope was somewhat of a Freudian slip when he started describing Allen Robinson some and kind of joking around a bit during the interview about what he may or may not be able to do with that kind of guy there. I'm hoping that he meant what he was joking about, because that changes completely, I think, our ability to evaluate Mitchell, to evaluate the offense on the whole and Matt Nagy's scheme. I hope he's being honest about that in that joke.
What specifically?
When he's talking about maybe I'll just close my eyes and let it go down the field a little bit with a big guy like Allen Robinson with that kind of skill set.
That's what I talked about before.
Do it.
But that's, again, it's back to my thing about putting on the small hole or shooting baskets with the big basketball.
Absolutely.
That if you're at the point where you are trusting your targeting computer to say, open enough. It might not be what I used when I saw Kendall Wright. I'm like, open, no, maybe no. And then he sacked. And now you can go with, I see the defender open enough, throw it.
Nagy and Reed were able to somehow rewire Alex Smith a bit this last season, and they let him go down. Well, they probably hit him with a cattle prod to go downfield. Go down, stop being Captain Checkdown. And hopefully, well, that certainly opened things up for the Chiefs, and hopefully that is exactly what you were able to do with Mitchell Trubisky in giving him some of the weapons to do so. We get to see him make big boy throws more often than we saw him make last year.
You're going to have another opportunity to win $1,000 cash. It is always an exciting time when I give you that keyword to text in and maybe win a grand. You got to be listening if you want to win to Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Well, if you're using your lower body and not your legs, what, pray tell, are you using?
Hips, butt, that ass. That's what you got to throw with.
Hey, some people
are. That's what you get into the football, Dan.
That's reinventing the mechanics of throwing.
Yes, it would be.
And we're going to use your lower body, butt. Not your legs. That's the trick of really getting it right.
You know, in
that's
that interview,
the Gordian knot of quarterback mechanics.
It's the scene from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Well, do less. And now you're really not doing anything at all. You got to do more than that.
I love that movie.
It's fantastic.
Back to, again, 20 minutes too long.
JJ, at the ends, although the puppet show thing at the end is hysterical with Hader just losing his mind during the whole musical.
It's all good, but all Judd Apatow and Judd Apatow-related movies are 20 minutes too long. And you don't have to reaffirm that Leslie Mann is hot. Yes.
She is.
Fine.
Done.
But it doesn't need to be said by other people in the movie just because she's the director's wife.
If that was a subtitle to each movie.
I would totally do you. And she's like, well, okay, great. And then the director's like, hey, yeah, let's write in another scene where they have to say how hot my wife is.
I don't know. Is three enough? I don't know. Maybe we go for four. Maybe we put the fourth one in there. J.J. Stankovitz of NBC Sports Chicago tweeting that perhaps Allen Robinson is going to Instagram for a little bit more weapons for Mitchell Trubisky. Robinson went on an Instagram live video, apparently just this afternoon, like a little while ago, and asked his followers on Instagram to go after Allen Hurns and let him know that he'd be welcome here in Chicago. So Bears fans, it seems, have absolutely blown up Allen Hurns. Hey. I guess it's Instagram mentions or Instagram comments with just Bears, come to the
is
Bears.
Is this legal? Is come this over okay?
I think it is,
he's
right?
Not under contract,
no,
right?
No, he's not under contract. And neither are the fans. The fans aren't under a contract. The 847, tamper as much as they want.
847 says, using your lower body but not your legs, Mitchell Trubisky obviously is talking about shooting the ball out of his ass like a cannon. Like one of those, like one of the Beatles in Starship Troopers. Remember?
He's firing the thing out.
Yes. From Clendathu or wherever they were from.
Okay.
Am I right?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes,
Clendathu points for me. This segment brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Firestone Complete Auto Care. Keeping cars running newer, longer, whatever you drive, drive a Firestone. And now it is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is camera. Camera. I am a camera. Text camera, or if I could be a camera, back to REM, to 72881 by the end of the hour. The keyword is camera to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
All I can think of is how you take the snap if you're firing the ball out of your ass like a cannon. Is that legal?
You take the snap, then load everything
up. The shotgun
up.
Becomes much more difficult right. And a very different enterprise
like,
altogether.
A jump
if
turn
that's
and
your throwing
down.
Motion.
Right. And that particular shotgun snap has to be on point.
It's a very intimate exchange, much more intimate exchange between the center and quarterback if that's your throwing mechanics.
This segment brought to you by Boost Mobile. With Boost Mobile, you can get four lines for only $25 per line, each with unlimited gigs. Plus, get up to four free Samsung J7 perks and 6 months of Hulu. It sounds to me like Trubisky has been immersed in quarterbacking school and quarterbacking thoughts.
You know, he mentioned too that it's not, you know, it's his team. He's got the responsibility. There's more on his plate, all that stuff. And he couched a little bit of it in, I don't know, quarterback speak or athlete cliche or whatever. But he said, it's not about me being possessive. For what it's worth, I'm okay with him being possessed.
You're the quarterback of the Bears.
Be that way. I'm cool with that.
Walk into the room and say, I want everything to help
me. Throw it on the table and let him know it's yours. Like, that is totally good with me. That's what he's supposed to be doing at this point. And if he's hedging now because he doesn't have the complete control of the complete command of what those protections are, what the verbiage is, what the route combinations necessarily need to be, fine. But just know that, because Mitch needs my permission to go out there and let him know it's his team. Go get it and go do it. Let him know that's yours, because the sooner you take control of it, the better off your development, I think, in part, is going to go.
He is Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. This is your new midday show. You will hear us from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sports Radio 670. Bernstein and McKnight, we are going to say good afternoon to the afternoon show of McNeil and Parkins. That is coming up after an update on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.